From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. Baltimore has a reputation as an affordable city, especially when compared to cities like Washington, D.C. But increasingly, it's not affordable, especially when it comes to housing. A large proportion of Baltimoreans struggle to keep a roof over their heads. Tomorrow, city residents will vote on Question J, a ballot initiative meant to address the problem by setting up an affordable housing trust fund. We talked to a reporter who's covered such trust funds across the country, including the proposal in Baltimore.
They vary, you know, in how effective they are in funding housing initiatives and affordable housing, but in some cases they can be really powerful tools.
Is an affordable housing trust fund likely to fix Baltimore's housing problem? It's on the record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're On the Record. We're focusing today on affordable housing, or rather, the lack of it. Many people in the Baltimore region have a tough time keeping a roof over their heads. Rents have increased sharply in Baltimore in recent years, with no comparable rise in incomes. As a result, fully a third of Baltimore City residents pay more than half of their income for housing, according to a recent Able Foundation report. This morning, we're talking about a ballot initiative that may have escaped your notice in this dramatic election season. Question J on the Baltimore City ballot, it would establish what is known as an affordable housing trust fund. How would that work? How would it differ from the city's current inclusionary housing program? How have similar efforts worked in other cities? Rachel Cohen, a freelance journalist and senior writing fellow at the monthly The American Prospect, has joined us from the studios of NPR in Washington, D.C. Last week, In These Times magazine published Rachel's feature on affordable housing ballot initiatives, including the one in Baltimore. Rachel Cohen, welcome to On the Record.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Let us start with the need. Affordable housing has been a problem in Baltimore City for decades. Is it any worse now than it ever was?
It does seem to be getting worse for particularly middle-income residents. And I think it's interesting because there does tend to be sometimes a narrative about Baltimore that it's, you know, much more affordable because we tend to think of very expensive East Coast cities like Washington, D.C. and New York City and San Francisco. But the Able report, as you mentioned, sort of showed that among the top 25 largest U.S. cities, Baltimore actually ranks fifth for rental housing burdens because a lot of people have below average incomes, but we rank sort of average rents, whereas other cities that have below average incomes also have below average rents. And so for those groups of people, it's really, really difficult, and it's been really difficult. Certainly, unemployment numbers came out on Friday, and for African Americans, that's still like double that of whites. So in Baltimore, it's still, you know, not good. And then for earners in the middle class, the Able Foundation found that over the past 6 years, the numbers have gone up dramatically for those people.
The numbers of the rental burden, the rent compared to the income they have to pull into the equation.
Yeah.
So now there's this proposal in Baltimore for an affordable housing trust fund. What exactly is an affordable housing trust fund?
So trust funds are sort of entities that can be financed in multiple different ways, and the funds in them can be spent in multiple different ways. And people like them because they're flexible and because you can change what they're going towards and you can change how they're being funded. There are 770 affordable housing trust funds in states and cities and counties across the country. And they vary, you know, in how effective they are in funding housing initiatives and affordable housing, but in some cases they can be really powerful tools. In Baltimore, the trust fund that they would establish could be funded by lots of different sources, from philanthropy to local dollars, from state dollars or federal dollars or private financing. There's lots of different ways you could imagine putting money into this fund. And the idea would be that it would be a designated pool to fund a variety of different affordable housing initiatives.
Well, let me backtrack. You said in many cities, a trust fund can be a powerful tool. Can you give me an example?
Sure. Well, in Washington, D.C., they have an affordable housing trust fund that receives annual allocations of $100 million. And the city then decides what they're going to put the money towards, whether that's constructing new rentals or rehabilitating units that need repair. And so that sort of can vary from year to year, but the sort of funding it annually is the thing that stays constant.
You write that, quote, a housing trust fund's effectiveness depends largely on how committed the local jurisdiction is to funding it, end quote. And you just mentioned how that might work in Baltimore. I mean, do these trust funds in other cities and states, do they typically end up getting funding or do they tend to languish?
Well, so it depends. So Maryland actually has a housing trust fund on the state level, but the formula from which money goes into it, it has been less funded in recent years after the recession. And the state could change how they allocate money into it, but they haven't so far. Other states, you know, you could have a formula that's less dependable on the whims of certain markets. Or so in Baltimore, they're talking about different ways you could imagine funding, some being more stable. So they're talking about maybe pressuring local universities that are exempt from property taxes to be making contributions directly into the fund. I know there are philanthropic sources that are interested. So it is a matter of sort of political will and getting those commitments. And I think, you know, not every housing trust fund is effective. But I think in Baltimore, there's a lot of growing awareness that the city hasn't been doing enough to prioritize this. And so it's sort of a good time to move forward with something like this.
Is it your impression that most cities and states have a dedicated stream of funding for the trust fund, or is it a matter of year by year coming up with an allocation?
I think a lot of trust funds have dedicated streams. A popular funding stream I learned about was document fee taxes. So anytime, you know, you need to bring in a form to a registrar or formal real estate documents, then sort of a cut of that could go into the housing trust fund to fund affordable housing initiatives. And some people use taxes. And I think that Baltimore wants to find a way to have funding going into the trust fund that's not dependable every single year on politics.
In Baltimore, the Affordable Housing Trust Fund initiative is on the ballot because a coalition of local groups gathered more than 18,000 signatures to get it there. It did not originate with elected officials. Is that typical of how a housing trust fund gets into the public domain?
It varies. The Center for Community Change has been the leading group that helps coalitions work to get these advances. I mean, sometimes it could come from an interested political official, but I think it's definitely not uncommon to find grassroots coalitions and organizations working to push this forward.
I guess part of what I'd like to understand, if you have any insights into whether the fact that it was a citizen initiative as opposed to a top-down proposal, whether that has any implications for whether or not it would be funded should it pass.
Well, I think the fact that there's going to be a new mayor and a lot of new members on the city council is relevant here because it's not like they could have gotten commitments from people who aren't going to be there in the following year. I know that a lot of the people involved in the effort have been talking with candidates and meeting with leaders for a lot longer than just the Affordable Housing Trust Fund effort. United Workers has been making housing an issue in Baltimore for longer than since May when the Housing Trust Fund campaign sort of launched. So I think it is a question of how much pressure there will be to fund this thing. And that is something that, you know, citizens need to be paying attention to.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Kastz. We're going to take a quick break now. When we come back, we'll look more closely at the Affordable Housing Trust Fund proposal on the ballot in Baltimore City. We'll hear from a supporter and an opponent of Question J, and we'll continue our conversation with journalist Rachel Cohen. Right back. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cast. We're talking about an initiative on the ballot in Baltimore City to create an affordable housing trust fund. My guest is journalist Rachel Cohen. She reported on affordable housing trust fund ballot initiatives for the magazine In These Times. I also spoke yesterday with an opponent of Question J, the ballot measure here, as well as a supporter. Let's start with Carol Ott, director of Housing Policy Watch, an advocacy project focused on housing and blighted properties in Baltimore City. I asked Carol Ott why she plans to vote against establishing the trust fund.
It's not so much that I'm against the idea. I just feel that because it doesn't have any earmarked specific funding for it, then we're only kind of replicating what we already have with the inclusionary housing trust and the inclusionary housing law. So if it had funding attached to it, I'd actually be far more in favor of it.
So refresh our memory. The inclusionary housing law requires developers of a certain number of units to set aside some for low and moderate income. But developers get a waiver if there's no money in the fund to pay for those units, correct?
Right. And the fund, as I understand it, has less than $100,000 in it. You know, we want to enact laws that sound good and feel good, but then when it comes to the implementation, there's no money behind it. So knowing where that money would come from would be a good first step in getting more momentum around this ballot initiative. You know, that's another thing we tend to do a lot in Baltimore. We tend to duplicate what we already have, but what we already have isn't working, so there's no indication that the new plan is going to work either.
That's Carol Ott of Housing Policy Watch. I also spoke late yesterday with Odette Ramos, executive director of the Community Development Network of Maryland. She works with Housing for All, a coalition supporting the trust fund initiative. The coalition organized the petition that put the trust fund on the ballot. I asked Odette Ramos why she's pushing for an affordable housing trust fund.
So we wanted to try to have something where there was some community participation in the decision-making. And that is what the word trust means in this case. In our case, it's a 12-member commission of people who are renters, homeowners, as well as developers, lawyers, and other advocates would be on this commission. And there really hasn't been, other than through the inclusionary housing law, that hasn't been as effective as we would have liked, any other real strong statement from Baltimore City saying that affordable housing is really important.
But this initiative doesn't come with an earmarked source of funding. Why not?
Correct. Two reasons. One is that strategically we thought probably doesn't make sense to try to come up with a funding source and argue about the funding source versus the arguing around the merit of the need for affordable housing. But also because we decided to move forward with gathering signatures, so it became an initiative. By law, the Maryland Constitution does not allow a ballot initiative gathered through signatures to appropriate funding or to create funding.
But the ultimate trust fund, if it's approved, would need to be funded to be effective. So where would you envision funding coming from?
We had initially proposed like an Airbnb tax, and then the mayor has already put forward putting together an Airbnb tax for general funds. So we need to think of some other ways to do this. So we'll be working with the city council on figuring that out. We're hoping to be able to find a funding source that would raise about $25 million a year.
So $25 million a year is what you think it would take for this to be effective?
Yeah, to make good impact, we would like to have that much in the fund, definitely.
That was Odette Ramos, who led the coalition that petitioned the trust fund to a public vote. The coalition included United Workers, ACLU of Maryland, Casa de Maryland, Enterprise Community Partners, and Odette's group, Community Development Network of Maryland. Rachel Cohen, Carol Ott of Housing Policy Watch compares this Affordable Housing Trust Fund to the city's existing inclusionary housing program. How effective has that program been?
Well, that program has been sort of notoriously ineffective. Baltimore has just a really weak inclusionary housing law because it's so easy for developers who want to do projects to get a waiver. The initiatives you can do through a housing trust fund are so much broader. So there are a lot more opportunities to address a much wider range of housing needs within the city through a housing trust fund, whereas the inclusionary zoning law has sort of a very specific goal, and we also fail through the limits of how the law is written to be able to pursue that goal. So I asked Todd Cherkis of United Workers when I was doing the story, you know, don't you feel like this conflicts with the efforts to reform the inclusionary zoning law? And everyone agrees that that's not good, but they thought in terms of momentum, there's been a lot of efforts to try to fix that law for a long time and it hasn't gotten very far. And so they thought with the Housing Trust Fund, it just might be easier to start from scratch with something rather than to try to fix what's broken in another area, although people recognize that still needs to be done too.
It seems to me that that is sort of the threshold question that Carol Ott and Odette Ramos are debating. Since both of these approaches require a public commitment of funding, the question is, would it be better to continue to put pressure to fund the approach that already exists in law, or will it fritter away resources to try to continue that while also setting up a trust fund?
Well, I think if you only focus on the inclusionary housing law, you're not addressing other things. So, for example, rehabilitating vacant housing or constructing new mixed-income housing. I think there's other housing needs that the city has that arguably should be focused on in addition to inclusionary housing. I think also philanthropic sources can't fund the inclusionary zoning law, for example. There are certain opportunities this opens up, I think, that we didn't have before.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with journalist Rachel Cohen. She recently reported on affordable housing trust fund ballot initiatives across the country and in Baltimore for the magazine In These Times. We haven't talked much about the nuts and bolts of the proposal on the Baltimore ballot. Who would benefit from the trust fund as it's being proposed here?
So the trust fund would target individuals earning 50% below area median income and 30% below area median income. 30% of area median income in sort of housing jargon language amounts to people who have what are considered extremely low incomes. And these thresholds are relevant because the debates over affordable housing with Port Covington this past year have been very heated.
Port Covington, the development in South Baltimore that's gotten approval for a big tax increment financing.
Yeah. While the developers of Port Covington have agreed to build some affordable units, critics of the development project note that they won't be affordable enough for individuals who earn 30% of the area median income. They will still likely be out of reach for them. And so, especially in light of those debates, the Housing Trust Fund could be a tool to cater to the affordable needs of the very poor in Baltimore, as opposed to just the people who struggle with housing, but it's not on the same level of dire need.
Are there any elements in the proposal in Baltimore that are sort of unique to Baltimore or unusual compared to how trust funds are set up in other places?
There hasn't been so much defined about what the fund would do or be like. The amendment is really to give the city council authority to fund the fund. Some people asked, well, why don't you try to push for the authority for the city council to fund a lot of different things? And they said they wanted to just focus on this housing trust fund because for sort of political and strategic reasons, they thought their focus would be better narrowly spent on this effort. It's unique in that this would only give the city council authority to fund the housing trust fund, not, you know, other things.
So you're saying that allowing the city council to fund initiatives about housing, affordable housing, that would set a precedent?
Right now, the city council doesn't have the authority, and a group of organizations have been organizing to ask the voters to give the city council that authority. So, you know, conceivably, you could see similar efforts in the future of going to voters and say, do you want to give the city council the authority to fund other sorts of initiatives?
Odette Ramos told us she's hoping the trust fund, if approved, would be funded about $25 million a year. How does that amount compare to what other localities put into the trust funds that they have?
It does vary. I spoke with someone who works with groups across the country, and she pointed to Richmond, Virginia, and Nashville as places where they started out with a lower value, but sort of over time, as people got used to the fund and how it worked, they were able to find other revenue streams and it grew. So the $25 million could be a starting point. It could grow. In DC, they have $100 million. It had always been $100 million. I'd say if there was $25 million more annually allocated for affordable housing initiatives in Baltimore, that's certainly not nothing, but obviously the need in Baltimore is pretty great.
A lot of organizing went into collecting the signatures to put this on the ballot. What kind of message do you pick up from that about what the intensity of the affordable housing issue is in Baltimore?
Yeah, so over the summer months, they collected over 18,000 signatures, and Baltimore certified over 12,000 of them. And I think it's really significant because you have a lot more groups in recent years that are making housing a real political priority to organize around. So I think as people wonder, would this just sort of be repeating the same mistakes, this housing trust fund, and is there actually momentum? I think there's an evidence that there actually is a lot of momentum. And we saw that this past summer with groups organizing around the Port Covington Sagamore deal with housing. And I think Todd Cherkis from United Workers said he was surprised, frankly, by sort of how diverse the types of people across Baltimore who were really interested in signing the petitions. So I think that there's certainly a lot more people who recognize that this is something that the city hasn't been focused on enough and are paying attention to and willing to organize around.
What do you think then the message would be if Question J fails?
I think if Question J fails, that doesn't mean, obviously, that there's not a need. We know there's a big need. But it could mean that the organizers didn't do a good enough job of explaining this initiative. I think, as we've discovered over the course of this conversation, like some aspects of it are technical because it's about funding streams. And maybe organizers will say, well, maybe strategically we should have tried to be more clear about where we envision funding come from. But I think that they're not wrong to identify that there's interest in this issue and a great need for it.
Have you picked up any large interest groups working against Question J, a real organized effort to defeat it?
No, I couldn't find any. I think that there are groups that have different visions for housing in Baltimore, and you know, not all the groups, even in the coalition, may share the same vision, but I think everyone who supports the trust fund sort of sees how it might be a tool to advance, you know, their own vision for housing in Baltimore.
Rachel, I appreciate your walking us through this. Thank you.
Thank you.
Rachel Cohen. She's a freelance journalist and American Prospect Writing Fellow. She reported on the upcoming Affordable Housing Trust Fund ballot initiative in Baltimore for the magazine In These Times. We also spoke with Carol Ott of Housing Policy Watch and Odette Ramos of the Community Development Network of Maryland. This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cast. Thanks for listening. Tune in tomorrow.